On Rethink Real Estate today, we're going to be going through mobile homes. Interesting concept. Is something that I definitely think that people turn a blind eye to. And I wanted to have Franco on. Franco Perez is our guest today. And I jumped at the opportunity to bring him on because, again, just something a little bit different and interesting from either an investment standpoint or whether it is that you're a realtor. And if we are going to do what we should be doing is the nurturing people through a particular area and taking them on the journey and having multiple transactions with them in their life, you know, this could be a really easy way to get somebody into the marketplace from an early degree. So hopefully this is helpful and hopefully you get a little bit out of it. Thanks so much. Welcome to Rethink Real Estate. My name is Ben Brady, and this is a real estate podcast aimed to deliver sales strategies, marketing tips, and business insights from industry experts and myself to build a listing-focused business for the future. Let's get into it. Franco, welcome to Rethink Real Estate.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I usually want to kick it off with obviously asking you a little bit about obviously what you do and everything along those lines. But, you know, the mobile home space is where, you know, you've sort of taken this and sort of dominated it, so to speak, or I don't know, leveraged probably isn't the right word, but for somebody that's just tuning in and they're obviously thinking, hey, am I going to stick around for this episode? You know, why is it, what are they going to learn? You know, why should they stick around and listen to what you have to say?
Well, I believe it's like, it comes down to this. I mean, me coming from my story back then from a low-income single-family home, and how do we look at real estate back when I was in that position, and how do I understand it now, and how do we use that to help other families that are in that situation and really innovate how we look at housing and build up a bridge for low-income families to be able to get a step ahead.
Well, it's certainly like for me doing a little bit of research on this, and certainly for the people that are listening now and they've heard the introduction that we've taken them through, is that it's just a fascinating space, because that was one of the reasons that I really wanted to jump at the opportunity to have you on the podcast, is because it is an individual space that not a lot of people are certainly taking advantage of / trying to help people in the way that you're doing. I think that there's a common misperception with the word mobile home. And I think that there can be a common misperception from a commercial sense that, you know, there's such things called slumlords where, you know, people take advantage of this space. I definitely don't get that feel from your story or what you've done in any way. But why is there a stigma with mobile homes?
Well, that's a great question. And I think what we have to realize is that we don't really have a real perspective, or most of general public don't have a perspective of real situation where they go into a mobile home park. Our only association around this term mobile homes is what we see on the media, in the movies, on TV shows like Breaking Bad. You know, the movies in Hollywood portray this mobile home statement as a very, very low quality home, a very low income situation where there's criminals or drug dealers. And the truth of it is, it's actually something that's well misunderstood. And when we actually look into it, there's a full spectrum of mobile home communities. Yes, there are those really bad trailer park-like homes, but there's also a full spectrum where there's resort-like beautiful communities with golf courses, tennis courts, saunas, gyms in the communities where you see amazing families being able to start their wealth-building journey. And it really comes from lack of association with it, or and a lot of people don't know that it's around.
It's funny though, like I actually was on a run this morning, and I live in east side Costa Mesa, which is right next door to Newport Beach, and my run takes me you know, through the back bay and around the other side of it. And as I come into Newport Beach, on the back side of it is a mobile home park that I go through, and it's probably in some of the most prime real estate in the back bay. You know, like at the end of the day, there's certainly a stigma, but ultimately a lot of these mobile home parks are in prime locations.
Absolutely.
And those communities, like as you said, is I think that there's just a lack of association. I love that idea of it, is that, you know, you see the stigma that there is painted from the movies, and you write in Breaking Bad and all of these different series, and it does. It does put a negative connotation on it, and I guess that, you know, we deal with that on a daily basis through our auction process. People think auction, they think distressed or foreclosed or a bad situation, where we're using the auction terminology in order to sell a home for the highest and best possible price in a non-distressed situation. I guess that I want to sort of understand your angle on this from a business perspective. You know, if we're talking to the people that are out there at the moment, you know, most of our listeners are realtors. So we'll talk about that in a sense shortly, where how do you help your clients? How do you maybe help them get into this space, you know, from an affordability perspective? But how do you monetize this at the moment? Are you flipping properties? Are you, you know, enhancing mobile home communities? How are you monetizing this at the moment?
Yeah, I think if... a good way to kind of picture it is, well, I guess looking back at kind of how I grew up in the real estate world, I actually did a ton of real estate transactions back then. But coming from my weird situation that I was in a situation where I had a single mom and she was renting. I saw the struggle and the pain of her having to come up with her and myself having to come up with money just to pay at the end of every month of rent. And I say this because I started as a real estate agent, and in the real estate agent world, you're kind of trained to help the wealthiest people you can help get the most expensive housing that they can get. And unfortunately, it's a world where you have to say no to a lot of these great families that just want to get a start, get their first home. And you have to unfortunately say, hey, unfortunately, you can't afford this. You don't have enough as a down payment. You'll have to either move somewhere else or when you make more, you can talk to me later. Mm. And to me, being in real estate, saying no to someone like that when I was in those shoes back then hurt me so much. And I took a deep study into how real estate works, how can we change something up so that we can make a stepping stone for families in that situation. And like we just discussed, most of real estate don't really give a huge advantage to low-income families and families that aren't that don't already own a home. Now, if you're in an area like Costa Mesa or San Jose, California, you're either renting a two-bedroom apartment for $3,500 a month, or you can buy a single-family home at $1.5 million, and there's nothing in between. And that to me was a big puzzle piece I was trying to figure out. And I looked into government housing. I looked into several different housing and I really couldn't find anything. And I accidentally stumbled across mobile homes and realized, like we discussed, is that, hey, these are sprinkled throughout the country through, you know, in many key locations. And it's an infrastructure that's already there. And a lot of false myths are around this that, you know, they always feel that they depreciate in value. They're poor quality homes. They're bad locations and unsafe, where you actually walk into these communities and find that there's great families that are excited about their homes and their homes are actually holding value. And that just made me so curious about how can we improve this and how can we make this better? But I know that was a large tangent, but I think that's important to kind of help people realize.
Yeah, good context. Yeah.
Yeah. But overall, our business does different layers. It's basically two parts. One is our transaction. So we are like a real estate agent helping people buy and sell homes. And the secondary is how do we convert these old homes as a developer/construction company? How do we look at a mobile home's value, an old single wide trailer, and how do we convert that old home for a family into something that's larger, higher quality, and a beautiful luxury style home that's still in that location and allow for them to financially benefit in that way too. So that's kind of how our business works, if that answered your question.
Do you guys do any redevelopment of communities? Like if you get your hands on a full park and then you have to redesign it or redo it and then take on the management of that, is that something that you've looked at?
Yeah. So only recently really have we done a lot of consulting with park owners and allowing for them to better the value of their communities and beautify their communities and how can they when we're talking to park owners, it's more of the evaluation of their asset, right? Yep. So how do they better their occupancy? How do they better the attractiveness of their community, which will in the end return a better situation for them as well? But yeah,
it sort of promotes a couple of questions for me. The first thing is, do you see like in the areas, like for example, San Jose is a great example of this, is that San Jose is an area that probably has been one of the fastest moving marketplaces and has seen the greatest appreciation over. If you went through a 20-year cycle in the age of technology, is that it definitely saw a incredible increase, of course, based on you guys are at the base end of Silicon Valley. And I think that there's a part of this that you've seen this greater migration of people moving from, say, California or New York or wherever it is to areas like Florida and Texas and Oregon and all of these other areas based on the perspective that it's cheaper in those marketplaces. Now, this could be an incredibly naive comment, so forgive me if you think I'm wrong or anybody that's listening it just thinks that I'm completely off camber here. But, you know, I get to travel around North America quite a lot and I don't see a great deal of difference if you go and buy, say you use the Big Mac theory. So for example, McDonald's, they price a Big Mac based on the socioeconomic area within each one of their McDonald's stores based on where it is in all of the world. And if you use that, you know, all the accounting firms use that. And I don't see a great deal of difference in the pricing categories of, say, food or groceries or whatever it may be. Usually the difference is when somebody's making a decision to move, it's because they want to make it based on a real estate perspective, whether it be rent, whether it be, you know, to buy the property and the amount that you'll have to purchase the property for. But it seems to me is that a lot of people don't usually want to leave the area that they've actually grown up in or that they've been in for so long and that they know. They're usually forced out of the area from a price perspective. And I think that as far as it's concerned is that what you're doing is you're making it acceptable for them to look at a mobile home situation. Do you think that's a fair enough statement? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, the key thing is, you know, we're fortunately, I'm in San Jose where we kind of see the future of our whole country's housing problem, right? Overall, there's a lot of similar metrics, whether these prices are super high where we're at and whether it's another area like we help in Atlanta and other markets of Austin, right? The situation is, how do we help a lot of families that are renters and ease their access to start that wealth building journey through real estate? Because the problem is there's no stepping stones. I mean, just like how we talked about the difference of cost of living in different areas, the difference in income is kind of the same in different areas as well, right? So the problems that we see in San Jose could be the same situation in Atlanta, however, at 40% less, right? But the key is understanding how do we help create a bridge or a stepping stone to allow someone to start, because we all know like owning real estate is a great way to start the financial security for a family, to start the wealth building journey for a family. But how does someone ever dream of owning a home when they can't afford it and they're in the rat race of paying the landlord rent, right? And what I love about mobile homes is that it's a hybrid in between and it allows for someone in a location to start having a personal cash flow that's a little bit better than renting so that it'll ease their life for 4 or 5 years and their money automatically goes into an asset that they own that they can sell 5 years later, and now they can afford their step into the real estate journey, right? And that's key. And with what you said as well, is people live in many expensive areas because of nice schools, great economics of jobs, and also great weather. And we should keep it fair for everyone to be capable of living in these areas.
Yeah.
And through mobile homes and through other low-income housing programs, we're able to do that. And with mobile homes, we're able to do that in using the current infrastructure and doing it in a way that works kind of like in a capitalism way where they're able to use it to their own control, right?
Yep. Yep, understood. It's sort of, and again, I want to make sure that we're shedding the light on things and making sure that people understand this the most. You know, our audience is realtors, and I want to make sure that when they're advising people that they can explain this in the best way possible. It's my opinion of this, and I want you to see if you can correct this if you can, is that there's certain, like a good example of this, like let's say that you take the desert marketplace of California, being say Palm Springs, Palm Desert, you know, La Quinta and all of those areas there. There's a sort of perception that if you were to buy in the secondary home marketplace in a more cyclical and seasonal market, that market is affected more when there is a downturn in real estate, right? Now, as we look at mobile homes as an asset, there's definitely the sense that they can get overinflated quite quickly, and you can obviously overcapitalize or overinvest in that. Does it see a negative? What do you see, or what is your opinion of the mobile home marketplace when the market takes a little bit of a hit and comes into the back, you know, takes a back step? Is the mobile home market affected quicker, more than your traditional single family market? What's your opinion of that?
Yeah. And what's fascinating about that is that our business actually got busier in the down market. So, you know, it kind of comes out to capacity of who can afford what. And mm-hmm. what's interesting is you can always downsize. And I can't remember what year it was, but when homes weren't going for that high, we had a lot of people downsizing actually from single family homes into mobile homes to save costs, right? So,
but still wanted to own something, obviously.
Correct. And when you don't really have alternatives such as rent, you really have to be resourceful and figure out how to allocate your assets and how to allocate your money and your cash flow. So with mobile homes, the assets are actually hold its value stronger during those downturns because it's an alternative. Because when the market crashes, rents don't really go down either. Right. So this being an option for them to do the alternative of rent becomes a strong asset. However, I will say it is going to be every market has its own different nature, right? What I'm saying in the Bay Area could be different in Texas. It could be different in Atlanta, but it's important to know that this is an option out there.
Yeah. A question that I'm thinking about from an investment perspective, this seems really attractive that if I was looking to invest and long-term hold and, you know, help families, you know, that this would certainly do that if we were going to revitalize some of the, or maybe even, you know, whether we purchase some of the properties that maybe you fix up or that someone else is fixing up, or we choose to do it ourselves or whatever it is, or somebody listening wants to do this and take this avenue, what are the things that people need to look out for if they're looking to invest into a mobile home park just from an individual property perspective? You know, what do they need to consider? What haven't they thought of? You know, what is different to buying single family, you know, residential real estate versus mobile home? And what are the things that people need to be aware of?
Yeah. So if we're talking on the mobile home investing side as a park owner, so there's a ton of key things to look out for. Utilities and how you're obtaining utilities is a key thing. Mm-hmm. If you have a septic system that's getting really old, you'll have to allocate costs to figuring out how to get that how to get your system to an alternative option. The other is understanding the government regulations in those areas. How is rent control analyzed? And then also one key thing is understanding the overall real estate demand in those areas as well. Filling in a park in LA market or the Bay Area market, it's very easy. Now, once you get 3 hours away or 4 hours away, it's not as easy and it might not be what everyone hopes for it to be. But okay.
Yeah, that's an interesting statement because usually you would think that obviously people would, it's kind of like the multifamily space is how I look at this in the sense that, you know, a lot of people, to buy a multifamily in LA or the Bay Area is quite expensive to do so. And usually it doesn't look like a really good return on investment most of the time or cash on cash return. So therefore you go out wider, say you go, you know, a couple of hours away, like you said, and usually it's still okay from a demand perspective, but then you're getting a little bit better yield, so to speak. That's a really interesting concept that I could see a lot of people that could get hyped up in the process of going, oh, hey, I could buy a few of these from an investment perspective and fix them up. It's very interesting to see you saying that a mobile home park designated in some of the more populated and more expensive areas are always going to probably be more attractive for people to be able to fill them, okay, because of the location of where they're at versus the ones that people are going to look at from a more remote perspective, so to speak. That's a really interesting thing that I hadn't even thought of. But I think that there's a part of this that also I'm thinking about as well. Just from an individual, let's say that I'm going in and purchasing a mobile home, and I was looking at downsizing, or I'm looking at, you know, my very first one of them. You know, I've got a little bit of a stigma in the back of my mind as a buyer going, hey, I don't really know if this is going to be the right thing for me to do. Or it could be the other alternative. It could be that I'm really excited because I never thought that I'd be able to afford real estate. Okay. So I go in there and I'm overexcited about it. If I'm an individual buyer of an individual, you know, mobile home, what are the things I should be looking out for in that mobile home as things that you've seen as common defects?
Yeah, so the age of the mobile home makes a huge difference, and there's the right home for everyone, right? So, you know, for a family that can't afford much, I don't want to down talk having an older single wide home because, you know, I just recently actually had a client of one of our team members that this really, you know, this old trashy single wide home is really their start of their dream. And they're so happy about it, right? So you can get an old home, fix it up, and have that be your first home. But typically, the age of the home will determine when it was built. If it's pre-HUD, which is in 1978, there was a huge standard improvement of how these homes have to be built.
Okay.
With 1978 homes and older, most of our homes are built. Most mobile homes right now are built back then. They didn't have big standards. You still have paneling. You still have metal, very thin exteriors. But that's what we're working on now is how do we improve this style of housing and improve the standards of housing so that now you see the homes that we've built with 12-foot high ceilings, drywall throughout, 2x4 exterior, that sort of thing. Ultimately, to answer your question, it comes kind of down to what you can afford, right? But in the end, it's really understanding how do you select the location of your park? How do you understand the space rents or the lot rents of the community, mm-hmm. and use that to allow to assess the value of how your home would appreciate as well?
Yeah. Naive question: do you pay property tax on mobile home?
It's similar to property tax. You pay about. You pay pretty much similar to property tax on the newer homes. On the old homes, actually, you don't. So 1978 and older, it's actually a huge perk. But the perk of how you analyze property tax with mobile homes is that you pay that percentage on a $1.5 million home versus a $300,000 home. It's a huge difference, yeah. Right? So that's something that's really a big perk of this as well.
Now, the communities that they're based in, if I'm buying an individual mobile home, there's HOA fees involved, or are they called community fees? Is it still the same terminology?
It's typically just the lot rent. Okay. So for people to really understand the concept of why this works for most is I spoke about, you know, there's either renting or owning, and people don't see that sense in between. I kind of want to lay out the how the pay structure works, if that I feel like it would be beneficial to
the place.
Okay. So basically, I mentioned there's, you know, let's say in our area, and the numbers could be very different to the listener in their area, but in our area, $3,500 a month gets you a 2-bedroom apartment for a family in, you know, just for an apartment. If you wanted to buy a single family home at $1.5 million, you could put $150,000 and still have an $8,000 monthly payment just to pay for that home. That's a huge gap in between, right? Now, if we're talking a mobile home in San Jose, you can purchase a home for about $350,000. Your 10% down payment is no longer $150,000. It's $35,000, right? So now that's much more attainable. And if they were to put a $35,000 down payment, their monthly space rent to the park is about $1,100 a month, and their mortgage is about $2,800 a month. Mm-hmm. So their total monthly payment is under $4,000, right? So just by paying a little bit more monthly on their housing by switching from a rental apartment where you get nothing at the end of your lease to now an asset that you have that's pretty much a forced bank's savings account that allows for you to use and pay that mortgage and have something that has benefits of home ownership. You have appreciation, tax benefits, you get to leverage your equity, and you get those benefits in a much different model, but it's much more affordable. And with that, they have better financial security and more stability in their payment.
A question from perspective that, let's say I buy a mobile home and it's in a particular park. What are the typical rules around the fact, can the owner of that park, let's say that he sells the park and the person that they sell it to, okay, they are going to redevelop it and basically give people notice to say, move your stuff or, well, you lose it. Like, is there any fear around that for people purchasing, and what should people look for and look at?
Oh, there's tons of fear around that. And it's something that's really deeply misunderstood as well. It's very, very difficult for that to happen. And it rarely does happen, but it has happened a few times. And I was a part of it as well, helping guide the residents also. But people have to understand that there's huge regulations on if a park owner chose to develop that. It's very much like an eminent domain situation. Mm-hmm. The developer or park owner will have to pay that person the value of their home plus the cost of relocating them as well. So this happened in San Jose, where residents actually got more than what their home was originally worth as well. And one big thing to that, to add to that, to helping that fear, is that you got to keep in mind that banks are smart too. They're not going to invest their money into lending out a resident $250,000 if they don't know that this is protected as well. So they have to know that there are laws that protect their assets as well.
That's a beautiful segue, because I was going to talk to you next about the lending side of things. You know, you've given a breakdown of the financials, so I'm assuming that there's no real difference in the lending side of it for a mobile home. Is there any restrictions? Are there any particular companies that do and don't do it?
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of differences. Typically, you know, so I do a lot of lobbying in DC around helping ease, create better financing option around these types of loans. The big banks don't really do it, but there are loans that do it. And you'll typically see 25-year loans. And, you know, one thing that's a big difference is that they need for it to be your primary residence to live in. So, you know, they want to make sure that this is not something that you're trying to just purchase as a rental or a secondary property and that sort of thing too, which actually helps society as well in keeping these homes affordable also.
Yeah, I can see that stipulation would be very helpful, because then they're not competing against investors that are then, because I'm assuming as an investor, you'd have to be an all cash purchaser then, or is there investment opportunities?
Actually, what's kind of a beautiful thing in my perspective personally is that the parks as well have their regulations also, that, hey, they don't want investors to be purchasing the particular mobile homes themselves, because then they'd be driving. Because one of the things with real estate right now is that you're not just competing with other families that need a home, but you're competing with families with getting this as their 10th home, or you're competing with hedge funds and that sort of thing. But in the mobile home market, every buyer is a genuine family that needs this as a place to live. Yep. And, you know, and that allows for that to be that way as well. So if you're asking if an investor can buy the mobile home itself to rent out, unfortunately, it's kind of difficult to do so.
Understood. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's kind of like the co-op developments in New York City and things along those lines, from a restriction of that. But I guess that the sort of final question that I've sort of thinking about now is that I'm assuming that there's communities that are owned by relatively large investment groups that do a really good job. Like, so for example, in Orange County, for example, where we're based, is that there's a company called the Irvine Company, and they're known that they just run a really, like, they run really good communities. The maintenance is always kept up to speed. You know, they're, don't get me wrong, like, if you try to break a lease or something along those lines, they're very hard to deal with in that sense if you're doing the wrong thing by them. But when you're doing the right thing by them, it is a pleasant place in order to live. And in order to, you know, we lease our building in Fashion Island from them, and they're great to deal with when you're doing the right thing. And they definitely, like, any little thing that ultimately we need help with or fix, they're immediately on it. I'm assuming that there's probably companies around the country that own multiple mobile home parks, and that, and they are just a much, they're a pleasure to deal with, so to speak, versus maybe independently owned mobile home parks that probably have some deficiencies and people, you know, hopefully not using it as like a slumlord type of thing, but realistically is still not running it to the efficiency that it should. Is there a particular brands that if somebody was looking at a mobile home park that they should look at that are managing those communities?
You know, it's in any industry or space, there's, you know, there's always bad representatives of kind of ruining the space, but it's hard for me to say that because they could be different in each region as well. But typically, it's good to go to the – what's beautiful about this these communities is you can really walk in and kind of get to know their community and talk to their park management as well and get advice through somebody that might specialize in mobile homes. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't say – I think you should be how do I say this? You'll automatically be able to tell if a community is a place that you shouldn't be in.
Got it. So it's pretty obvious.
Yes.
Yeah. Got it. Well, again, we've really appreciated you giving us the insight to this, because I think that it's a space that so many people probably are a little bit tedious around. But before we go, Franco, I just usually with our guests, we like to talk about some of the things that on an individual basis, what you do in order to keep yourself, you know, up to speed and focused and everything along those lines. Obviously, us reaching out to you and having you on the podcast means that you're an individual that has certainly succeeded in a particular space. But that means it comes with usually discipline and some personal habits that you know that you're doing on a daily basis that we usually like to share. Favorite books, favorite podcasts, favorite things for self improvement. Love to know just some of the things that you're listening to or doing.
Yeah. Favorite book, I'd say, is something that's not really real estate related, but it's called The Lean Startup. It's, you know, I have a lot of friends that have startups and companies. And that one has really allowed for me to think completely different. And that's my favorite book. Favorite podcast, Tim Ferriss is one that I'm a big fan of. I love that one. Yeah. Your podcast is great too. And as far as hobbies,
good plug. And stuff, good plug.
As far as hobbies, you know, growing up, I'm a big foodie, and growing up, I've always loved video and videography and that sort of thing. That was actually my dream as a kid to make movies and that sort of thing. So I do a lot of YouTube stuff around small businesses and restaurants and that sort of thing. So that's kind of my hobby, video. I love video editing. It's like my vacation or my escape from all of work. So that's wonderful. Something I'm into. And actually, plug for our stuff is if you haven't seen what a mobile home looks like, we have a mobile home YouTube channel where you can really see how these homes are built. And I really urge people to really see that for themselves and see how they're built, because that's really how what our big focus is now, is to really change that stigma.
And we'll make sure that all of your links and everything like that are in the show notes so that people can follow you and go through. And I've actually gone through a lot of your stuff, and I thought it was one very great, the quality that you guys are putting out from a marketing perspective and videography is absolutely exceptional. So congratulations on that. But I guess that the final thing, any routines or anything like that you do on a daily basis, weekly basis, monthly basis that help you stay focused that you could share with the group?
Oh man, one thing that I realized is I work really well. I do my best work and ideas in the early morning and late night. So I really try to dedicate that time to just being alone and focusing on work then. But outside of that, pretty basic stuff. I work out in the mornings when I can and eat healthy. I think taking care of your body is so important. And yeah.
Beautiful. Well, again, thank you very much for being on Rethink Real Estate, Franco. Looking forward to following the journey, and hopefully some of our Rethink Real Estate people reach out to you to learn a little bit more about mobile homes. So thanks again.
Thank you.
So about 75% of our audience hasn't liked, followed, or subscribed to our podcast. It would mean the world to us, and it would help this podcast more than you know to expand our reach if you were to like, follow, or subscribe on any of the platforms that you're watching or listening on. Thanks again.